splash that they could make. Well, when Hitler claimed prominently in his first part of his career that he wanted to come to power quite legally and faked that, he got more and more adherents, and the optimistic anti-Nazi Germans always thought, oh, he gets massive because now they are consoled, they believe that Hitler will come to power only by a mass vote and only in the legal means, and they are quietened down, and that will finally prove Hitler cannot do that, and that will be the end of him. We learned later that the reason had been the opposite. The reason was that they knew that he was lying, that they hoped that he was lying, and were almost sure that he was lying, and said, let him do them in, let him do them in. Those fools will believe those lies, let's deceive them. The joy in joining a movement that operated with such means was tremendous. Where did they all come from? They were masses. When the final vote was given, it was 51% for him. So this readiness, inner readiness, is to be suspected, which means something is, and those who are not educated, philosophically educated men, they do not know anything about what we are talking about here, trying to get to the roots and metaphysical assumptions are false, the pieces and new ones aren't there, they haven't bothered with that. How did that knowledge, that devilish knowledge, denialistic knowledge, come into them? Where did they get it? Or what did they lose somewhere on the road in order to become ready for that? What were their real experiences, which they themselves do not know and cannot give account of? This shows that the problem of nihilism lies unfortunately deeper than we thought and even than Nietzsche thought. The latest attempts to analyze nihilism after Nietzsche are running either in a neo-Kantian and existentialist way out of the school of Glasgow. This does not amount to more than juggling with the terms being and nothingness. They are come about, as I read very lately, by a student or by a follower of Jaspers, not a student. Formulations that sound wonderful, namely, nihilism is something like the mirror writing of being. It is all just turned upside down, so to speak, or in the mirror, in the opposite direction. If that were so, then the switch from the mirror writing to the reality of being should be rather easy. But for everybody who falls into that trap, it is almost impossible to get out of it again. Namely, of the inner nihilistic belief. It is a belief we have before us. It is a definite, almost a face on which we act. So even the religious analysis by saying, well, the gods have gone out of the world, we are mainly irreligious today, and since they are out of the world, nothing but nothingness remains. Well, let's go slow about it. If the gods really are out of the world, and even God, let's say, and nobody believes them anymore, there's a lot left. namely the world. And perhaps there could be some exciting discoveries made, but no, the world is extremely worthless since we think God does not exist. But this is by no means reasonable. It might sound logical, but it sounds logical only because both issues have always been bound up in our thinking. And so if we say X isn't there anymore, we conclude that epsilon isn't there anymore either, which might not be so at all. But the wish that it be so is there. And that inner wish, that readiness, that will to nothingness, that makes the thing even more complicated. So we see it is by no means easy, and we might be on a wild goose chase. If even Nietzsche did not really get that ghost by the tail, but was misled into different, into propositions which we can no more accept, because we see that they are not sufficient to explain this mass phenomenon which we have constantly before us, then it is a hard business. And it certainly is. We got, apparently, in the last session so easily and so fast a hold of the other ghost, which we call the mother frame of the modern condition. Namely, we found that in all those ideologies that are presented to us, whatever they are, psychology as an ideology, which exists as a mass ideology, or Marxism, socialism, or capitalism, or racism, or whatever we have around, we found rather easily that they all have a common denominator. The common denominator is that they all appear in the definite form of either a materialistic philosophy or an idealistic philosophy, or a mixture of both. Then we found that their structure, after we had the closing of those ghosts and found all this black and white or black, namely materialistic and idealistic, or a mixture, or idealistic or materialistic, always a generalism, a general ideology of a metaphysical, cheap metaphysical kind. Jesus makes the assumption everything originates from matter, without knowing what matter is, or making the assumption everything originates from ideas without knowing what ideas are, or from the spirit. The spiritualism or materialism as accepted schemes or basis of belief is always there. There's no exception. Then we found, we went even deeper into the ghosts and found that they have a common structure. And that's the bone structure, so that is a paradox, of those ghosts, the skeleton structure, is a very funny one, and always the same. Or perhaps bone structure is right, because ghosts might have bones, and they have exactly that kind of bones, namely logical abstractions, and nothing but logical abstractions. With the final discovery of the logos as the inherent principle of all Western thinking, development, and culture by Hegel, trying to bring the logos himself out, the logos and his own process, the mere pale thought, namely our logical thinking, this mere abstract thought, was already proclaimed to be the very spirit, the world spirit that builds the world, transforms the world, and is the source of all creativeness. We have developed that, and we have seen that now in modern mathematics we really have this bone structure, this merely abstract formal structure of our own thinking apparatus, so to speak, with which we can build wonderful, airy systems. And so the naked child is there. This is Logos finally. There it is sitting and says, that's me, and I should have done all that. Yes, he has done all that, or he did it by himself. The logical consequence, as a principle employed in human affairs, as is done in all those ideologies, leads logically to absolute destruction. It can only lead to destruction, because in life, and especially in human life, the logicality of human life has to be enforced. Because there is no logicality in human life. One has to break it to make it logical, to make it graspable by logic. If we want to press it in the bed of logic, then we will first have the danger that we have to agree to certain basic assumptions. They are made by the materialists, or by the idealists, or by certain definite ideologies. Those are the laws, that is the truth, here you have it, and now we will enforce that truth logically. We will regulate your life from birth to death, as the Nazis said identically with the Bolsheviks. We will not let go of anybody till he is perfectly adjusted to this logical life. Here, the logic becomes the real prognostic bed for human beings. Namely, it is clear that they have to be readjusted again and again. And finally, the adjustment of prognostic, what if a man is too long for his bed, then he would just cut off his legs and he would fit. This cutting off of legs and hands and limbs and parts of the human body, I mean now metaphysically speaking, is going on permanently in such a logical system as soon as it has gotten the power to enforce its laws. So the changing of human beings finally really into nothingness is a permanent process that is necessary under such conditions. Well, this logicality is there, and is the structure of those things. And then we said, well, but there must be more to it. Those ghosts must have a soul too. They must have a will. There must be an impetus. There must be some purpose in all those things. And we started to suspect that this general factor, again a common denominator of all of them, could be nihilism. Now we have tried a little bit to approach nihilism, and we see it is by no means as easy as the other things have been. They are quite clear, but nihilism we know up to now only that we should reject the idea to look into the past for genuine nihilistic events. They have never been there. Nihilism is really as an ism, as a belief, as a faith, because it is a faith, an event that never happened to the human mind before the 19th century of our history. So Nietzsche, in spite of all his errors, was right when he said, the most terrible of all the guests has come to us, nihilism. But to find it in the way I indicate now, namely to find that nothingness can become and meaninglessness, a belief, and even a goal, almost a creative goal. Perhaps it is a decreative and anti-creative goal which imitates and has to imitate creative processes and does imitate creative processes by falsifying them, but exactly learning from them. This consequential pursuit of non-truth, this willing and willful pursuit of non-truth in the sense that it should be proven for everybody that there is no truth and that there can be no truth, and with it that there can be no freedom, and that there can be and should be no justice. What's the matter? Is that an anti-ethical proposition too? Is it merely non-ethical, or is it already anti-ethical? Is it consciously trying to make untruth truth, to make freedom slavery, to make justice injustice, and consciously so, as a kind of negative creative activity of the human mind? It seems that the root of it all must be in what we nowadays call so vaguely ethics. Because if it were not there, the readiness, the inner will of individuals who have not been much infected by ideologies that they could have convinced them, they are much too dumb to be that far infected. A few slogans of those ideologies are for most of them quite enough to have them join their ranks. This appeal, this power, is what has to be explained. And this power cannot be explained, as we have tried to do, by enumerating all the fantastic means that, let's say, totalitarianism, as the most accomplished of the nihilistic procedures, uses. Even this last and best insight in political science presented to us lately, which came to the conclusion that we have here a very, very clever and strange combination of ideology and terror. This is quite true. This is quite so. But that does, again, not explain. It explains only if it is already into power. How does it come into power? Where is the real convincing element? And if we then enumerate, those ideologies remobilize the darkest remainders, the stinking body of myths, so to speak, by going back and appealing to the most primitive superstitions that are in everybody of us, the blood superstition, and the parent superstition, and what is called by psychologists archetypes. This is all true, and yet it does not explain. It does not show us how the process in the person is really functioning. This cannot be done without a certain decision, and perhaps not conscious, but extremely willful decision to destroy oneself. Has the modern individual come to a point where he subconsciously or instinctively has decided that the worst burden that he could have would be the curse to have to become a person or a personality? Do they want to destroy just that and to become absolutely impersonal or superpersonal? Superpersonal is only what lures them into it. The will must be to become impersonal, to get rid of oneself. of that self one can apparently under our conditions no more become. And then one turns around, like the scorpion turns against himself when he sees himself in a circle of fire and kills himself. Is such a metaphysical suicidal attempt involved here? And could we trace it? What has man lost? What builds this circle of fire that might drive him to such a decision? So this steer we cannot get by the horse, as we did the other one. We'll be lucky if we get it by the tail first. Extremely lucky. Nietzsche tried to get it by the tail, and the tail, he lost even the tail again. It is a ghost that is the wildest beast of them all. So to find the horns, or the innermost center here, namely this strange readiness to accept every proposition almost, that has in it this tempting will to nothingness. Will to nothingness. Not even will to destruction is only derived from that. Will to nothingness would be the real metaphysical description of it. We cannot approach it directly, because nothingness is nothingness. Nothingness is nothing, apparently. And we try to find nothingness out as something. An active nothingness, acting for nothingness, then there must be a something in it which can be believed in. People do not want to do themselves in for nothing. There must be something they are striving for, if we approach it in the religious way. It is said, of course, always, that since we have atheism, we have unfortunately also this nihilism, because atheism is the real cause of nihilism. That amounts to the other saying that since we lost the gods, yeah, we must necessarily now love nothing. It is as wrong. Atheism, of course, is a belief. It is a belief to know that no gods exist, and is as crazy a belief in that sense as a belief in gods, only that it is negative. An atheist is a believer. He does not want to recognize the best basic philosophic and metaphysical fact that man does not and cannot know anything about the existence of God. He claims to know as much as a believer, namely he claims to know that there is no God. How much it is a belief, atheism, we can see in certain of its consequences. Not that I mean that atheism will lead us to nihilism, but it might give us a few hints of what can be really involved. This nihilist who knew best that he was one, namely Nietzsche, who knew that he was infected and spent his life for the diagnosis in order to find an antidote, and died by it in insanity. An insanity that would have come metaphysically if it hadn't hit him physically by an accident. Metaphysically, he was bound for insanity. There was no other way. He could not get out of nihilism, and he knew it perfectly well. His last attempt, which he did not probably even make, but others made for him by just falsifying and falsely arranging his last manuscripts. Nevertheless, there was a will in him to create a metaphysical system to be called the Will to Power, where he thought he could introduce a new divinity, Dionysos, into the world, even religiously, and where he thought he had overcome nihilism. But if we analyze that, then we will find that this preliminary system of his, where he thought he has his feet now on new ground, that this is one of the most interesting positions of nihilism itself. That his last child was as nihilistic as he always feared he himself is. Though he was much more than a nihilist. He was the enemy of the nihilists. He gives himself, shows himself in one passage which is concerned with atheism in his Zarathustra. In the very first chapter, the strange chapter where Zarathustra speaks to the people and they don't listen to him, and he has to say, well, they have no ears for me. They don't want to hear about Superman. Superman was his ideal of how men can become men, so to speak, which he isn't yet. And so I will talk to them about the last man. The last man, or the great vision of it, is that man who cares for nothing but happiness. And by that becomes that sleepy, disinterested individual that we see so often all around. He was a prophet in that. And they all shout, give us eye to catch it. Nihilism in his performances, what it is doing within the concrete ideological systems and trends of our time. He found they have a certain spirit in common, that's nihilism. They have certain structural features in common, materialism and idealism. They are based on a very strange use of logic. Logic itself almost ghost-like by now, non-concrete logic, logic that is entirely irresponsible and works as it only is entitled to work in mathematics, and works here like a machine in human affairs with the same irresponsibility that we grant to the propositions of logos and logic in mathematics, where it can do no harm and is merely a mental exercise of a great formal value at least. We want to have now, in order to make another way around the topic, to approach it from another side, to have a look at the specific materials that are used in our modern 20th and end of 19th century ideologies. We find at first sight that almost always a very strange mixture of this dry and abstract logicality is used with certain absolutely uncontrollable elements and almost elements of a kind of pseudo-vision, which we only, if we look nearer into it, can call mythical elements. Elements that somehow come out of myth. This is by itself an extremely strange mixture. It is so as if in this crisis, where what we call the logical mind has become unsure of itself, it remains sure of its method, the abstract logical method, and uses now this method in order to assimilate to itself the most unassimilable elements of what is left over or revived from our mythical memories.